From the Sunshine State, this is Tampa Bay's Tan Talk.
It's time for FLA Law, brought to you by the personal injury attorneys of Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes. This hour will be informative, along with taking your questions and comments. Now, here are your hosts for today's show.
That's right. This is FLA Law, live on the radio. As you know, this is your live legal call-in talk show that we have every Tuesday at 5 o'clock, where we come to you answering your legal questions live on the air. We are the personal injury attorneys of Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes, and we have this live legal call-in talk show at Tuesday at 5, and sometimes we have special guests who come and appear with us. They're usually our attorney friends and colleagues from various firms across the Tampa Bay area, and tonight is no different. We do have a special guest with us this evening who is going to be chatting with us about real estate law. And he's phoned in from the other side of the bridge to give us some insight. But before we bring him on the line and introduce him and have him tell us all a little bit about himself, I, of course, want to give our listeners the rundown on how to call in, how to get your questions answered if you have any tonight. So first and foremost, if you are trying to ask a question and you'd love to call in over the air, the number to the radio station is 727-441-3000. That's going to be the phone number that you will call into so that you can get your questions answered live over the air. Myself and our special guests tonight will tackle those as they come in. And of course, if you are shy, you don't want to hear your voice on the radio, or you prefer just to type a comment and do that, you can do that on our Facebook page. So we are streaming live right now from the law firm's Facebook account, and you can type a question right into the comment section if you prefer. And that Facebook page is called Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes Injury Lawyers. If you don't know how to spell Peronic, it's P-E-R-E-N-I-C-H. If you type that into your search bar on Facebook, you can find us. We should have a red circle around our profile picture. It'll show that we're live. Go down to the comment section. I'll see it, and I'll read it out over the air so that myself and our guests can tackle that question. And we're also on YouTube. So if you don't have a Facebook account, you're not able to listen to us on the radio right now, you can jump over to YouTube and continue watching the show as well. And that's a good way for you to tune in if you're not a Facebook user or you're not in your car next to a radio. So again, Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, Noyes Injury Lawyers on YouTube as well. But as I said, this is FLA Law on the radio, and my special guest is on the line, I believe. Are you there, McKinley?
I am here.
Awesome. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
Good. Long time no see. So just to give my viewers, our listeners, a little bit of a background, I met McKinley some years ago and our involvement together on the Fredrie Minnis Bar Association, which is one of the minority bar associations here locally in the Tampa Bay area. And it just so happened that Minnis and my law firm were both in the MLK parade in January, and I saw McKinley. I said, "Mac, you got to come on the radio show," and he agreed, and he was gracious enough to say yes, and so here he is.
So, no, thank you for the invite. I truly appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you coming on. So, of course, I gave a little bit of a tidbit as far as your name, but I didn't really get into who you are. So please introduce yourself and let our viewers know who you are, where you practice, what you do for a living, and then we'll jump right into it.
Oh, perfect. Thank you. As Jackie mentioned, first name is McKinley, last name is Justin. I am a licensed real estate attorney and also a licensed real estate broker in the state of Florida. I founded and currently manage two businesses at the moment. One is Justin Florida Law, which handles both real estate litigation and real estate transactional, such as landlord tenant, real estate and purchasing, closing, mortgage and finance, deed, quiet title, etc. Basically, anything real estate that Pat wants to do because Caesar's on Bob's.
All right, it sounds like you do the whole shebang.
and I love it. The second company is Justin Florida Realty, which handles sales and property management. That's the buying, selling side, and the managing side if you want to use a real estate agent. We have a branch manager, and an admin, and three great agents that's ready to handle those matters when Mac is in court pulling out his hair. So.
Right. So I guess my question is probably going to, a lot of them are probably going to sound pretty ignorant because, quite honestly, I don't know a whole lot about real estate law beyond what I learned in law school and had to retain for the bar exam. After that, I forgot everything. I don't really know a whole lot about it.
So. Which is not much at all. So yeah, no, I knew exactly what you knew until I started doing this.
Right. So as we go throughout this, most of the questions I'm asking for our listeners, but also a lot of them are probably just for my own benefit because I have no idea. But so going back to what you just said, obviously you have your two different companies, two separate entities, but you're an attorney. So coming out of law school, did you go straight into real estate law or did you practice in other areas?
No, I just went straight to real estate law. Okay. I was a paralegal at the public defender's office downtown Tampa, and I thought I was going to go to law school and join my colleagues after law school to do criminal law.
Right.
But it just didn't work out like that. The first class that I booked was real estate, and I didn't even know what to do with it. And I forever thanked my real estate professor, and I asked her, you know, what do I do with this? And she's like, well, get your real estate license.
Yeah.
You want to learn the industry, and then if you like it enough, there is a legal field that you can go into. So I started in 2015 as a property manager, and I was managing maybe about 20, 30 properties.
Uh-huh.
And as I was managing those properties, I saw the entire industry. I saw, you know, the property management aspect of it, the eviction, if they don't pay the rent, the selling part of it, if the owner decides, hey, I don't want to, you know, rent it out anymore because I got a problem tenant. I would like to sell it. So I saw that. I also saw the closing and the title aspect of it.
Yeah.
And so when I graduated law school, it was like a no-brainer. I was like, that's what I think I want to do.
It made perfect sense. So, yeah. Why go back the other way when you've already kind of carved out a niche for yourself? That makes sense. Okay, so then you hung a shingle right away, or did you work with anybody else before that?
No, I tried to work with someone else, but it didn't work out.
Okay.
I went to a job interview, and I was not actually on the calendar.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I think I heard this story.
Yeah, I know. I think I mentioned it to you. So I literally did that walk of shame and walked to the parking lot, and I told myself, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
So I decided, you know, I had enough knowledge just so I could start doing some simple stuff like the property management and then just the eviction.
Mm-hmm.
And I also did a lot of coverage court. So I covered for some of the attorneys in the area when they couldn't make their court appearances.
Right.
So after maybe about like 2 or 3 years, you know, the clients start piling up, the work starts. You know, words start getting around, and yeah, the rest is history.
And here we are. So how many years has your firm been in business?
Since 2018, so
awesome.
We're looking about 5 years now.
Awesome. That's wonderful. So I definitely have some questions about kind of real estate and understanding, you know, the different services that you provide as a real estate attorney and also as a broker and property manager. So it seems like there'd be a lot of overlap and not a lot of people understand the differences and what you may need an actual attorney for versus some other, you know, entity like just a real estate agent per se. So a lot of people, they go through the sale of property or the purchase of property and they never consult an attorney about much of it. So I would like you to give our listeners more insight as to, you know, the benefits of having an attorney and what you may be able to do for people in different transactions and things that they may have going on. So, So first, let's kind of get an understanding of litigation. I know you and I have some things and some topics that, you know, you and I have gone over, but so I may jump around a little bit, but I understand that obviously an important thing about property is understanding the title and who has the title and if there's any liens on the title and things like that. So is that something that you do? And if so, why is that important?
Well, yes, I actually have a title company, so I handle title matters as well. But I think I started doing title just so I could learn a little bit more about the title industry. Because it is separate from like a law industry. As a title company, you are a neutral party. You represent the transaction. You don't represent any one individual.
Okay.
But as a lawyer, I represent, you know, a client. I represent someone. But as a, again, as a title company, I have to be completely neutral. I have to make sure everybody's interest is my interest, and everybody's on the same page, like-minded.
Right.
So it is truly important to get, like, you know, a title company or an escrow or a lawyer to just review some of this stuff for you. So you don't want to buy a house that's underwater. And that's the term that we use. It's either underwater or... you know, or basically the mortgage is worth more than the house is worth. So you want to do a title search.
And so how would you know if the if a house is underwater?
Well, so that's where the title company comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in the auto industry, you have like, you know, lemon law, right, for cars. We have the same thing for houses,
okay.
But you have to go through the title
like
company.
Like the Carfax, right?
Exactly like the Carfax.
Okay.
So you have the title company. Once you get the contract together, and that could be done either from the realtor side or from the lawyer side, a realtor will be able to fill in a template contract. So we do have template contracts where they fill in the blank, and they said, hey, this is when closing is going to happen. This is when, you know, this is who the title company is going to be. This is when inspection has to be done. An attorney can actually draft those contracts.
Okay.
And basically follow through with everything. So once either the attorney or the agent, you know, finalize the contract, there's going to be somebody who has to be the title company. You really cannot have a sales contract without having a title company.
Right.
Because
right.
The moment it's executed, it's signed, that contract is sent to the title company. Then the title company order that, oh, you know, Carfax.
Right.
Basically, order the title search, because you need basically two things, right? You need the title search, which will find private mortgages or private liens. You also will need a municipality lien, which will find the local and federal government lien. So that's where they come in if you want to figure out if your house is upside down or underwater. Because, again, you don't want to buy a house. You know, you spent $300,000 on the house, but there's a mortgage that's $300,000. There's a lien that's $50,000. Your house is, you know, not really worth it. So you got to sit here for a little bit and find out if you want to sell it or just dump it.
Yeah, and so then as the attorney, what kind of things are you really trying to advise your client on as far as what they may not realize, I guess, about a home?
So as the attorney, you just want to advise them what they're getting, basically.
Right, right.
There's nothing I can do if for example, you're buying a property today and you said, hey, Max, do title search. Property comes back, there's three liens on there, three mortgages, and a bunch of other stuff.
Right.
All I'm doing is telling you, hey, by the way, there are three liens on this house.
Yeah.
There are mortgages on this house. You don't want this house.
Okay? Right.
So, but if you want it for personal reason, that might be a different story.
Well,
right?
That's exactly what I was about to say. So what if they really, really want it? Maybe there's some basis behind it. Can you clear all that stuff up?
Absolutely, you can clear for it, but who's paying for it? You are.
Okay.
So you can buy the new bag, the new shoes, even though if it's not worth it. But it's a personal thing. So, but you're gonna have to clear it up. So, say for example, there's court enforcement. You're gonna have to do the grass because maybe the grass is too high. Or say for example, if there's a vendor lien, the previous owner owed the vendor like $300.
Yeah.
You're gonna have to pay that $300. So, of course, we can always clean the property and clean the lien. And even if we can't, you can always go to court and do like a quiet title action to take out the cloud that's on the title.
Right. Okay.
But that takes time. That takes money.
That's money. So, and that's coming out of your client's pocket. I gotcha.
My client's pocket. So, again, if they want to pay it, it's a personal thing to them.
Yeah.
100%, let's do it. But I have to advise you, you know, as an investor, you know, if the numbers not right, then you don't do it.
Right.
It's a math not mapping type of deal.
Gotcha. Okay, so then as a broker slash, you know, you have a title company as the attorney. Is there ever a conflict, or can you kind of do all these roles, or you're not able to do everything for your clients? How does that work?
You're never able to do everything.
Okay.
And even if you can or try to, it'll get kind of muddy.
Gotcha.
Okay. So I do have a conflict title company. So whenever I'm representing the actual buyer or the seller as a broker, as a real estate agent, I have a title company that I said, you handle it. I don't get a cut from them. They don't really know me. This is somebody I just looked up online, and I did one deal with them, and I absolutely love them.
Yeah.
And I've never actually met anybody in that law firm. The other side, too, again, like I mentioned, if you're playing attorney, you represent the attorney, the buyer as their attorney, you're going to be somewhat biased towards the seller, right?
Right.
Like it's a given. Whether or not, you know, he's paying me or not paying me, you have a client, you have an ethical duty, you have a fiduciary duty to a client as an attorney. You can't be a neutral party as a title.
Right.
Of course, there are some exceptions, just like every law we learn in law school, there's exceptions. The only time I would probably maybe do it is if I disclose to all of the parties, buyers and sellers, and says, hey, this is who I am, this is who I represent in the past, and I just want to make sure if you're okay with it. And of course, they have to sign off for disclosure.
Right. Okay.
They have to sign off something. Of course, everybody has to be completely okay with it. If I can hear a sneeze or somebody's like literally not feeling well, I'm not doing it.
It makes sense.
Because, like, again, you know, it can get muddy so easy,
yeah,
so fast. And then, like, you know, you're having clients telling you, hey, no, you didn't represent me that well because you represented
absolutely
this person.
Absolutely. I can get tricky.
If that can get tricky. And then again, if they go online too, sometimes they can go online and, you know, find me together and says, hey, Mac, I want you to write us the contract.
Right.
And find us the title company. Then again, I could do it, but it's never really wise to be able to do title company, brokerage, and lawyer. And
gotcha.
If I do, it's either going to be like two of them, not all three.
Right. Well, that sounds like one of those professionalism ethics exam questions.
Yeah. They talk about me all the time in law school. Yeah, they talk about me in law school. NPRE, they got a subject about me.
I bet. It's like, okay, this is when I call the ethics hotline to make sure I'm doing something.
Yeah. So as a default, it's always a no.
Right.
As a default, right off the bat, it's a no. Then we work it out. Then we see if every party is going to be able to agree to just one or two things. And then, you know, we can do it.
Right. Okay. Well, so then what other type of, you know, I guess real estate or litigation matters do you really get into? Because when I think about real estate, the first thing that comes to mind as far as litigation, I'm thinking of like parties that once owned a property together and now they have to figure out how they're going to divide it or separate it. One person wants to sell it, one person wants to stay, and then there becomes some sort of dispute. That's like the first thing that comes to mind when I think of real estate litigation, but I'm sure that's very limited and there's probably a lot more to it, right?
Yeah, there's a whole field. But I think the next one, the second most that I see is non-disclosure. You buy a property today.
Okay.
They told you this was public sewer. You come in and you find out it was septic tank and it hasn't been clear in like 16 years.
Gotcha.
So they had an obligation for things you cannot see.
Mm-hmm.
They have an obligation to tell you about it.
And when you say that, you're talking about the seller who has the obligation.
Seller, yes,
okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am. So the seller, they don't have the obligation to tell you everything. They don't have to, because you have the right to do your own inspection.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know something that materially affects the value of the property, then you got to tell me about it.
Exactly.
You got to tell me about it. So if I walk in and then, like, literally I see the roof leaking, you don't have to tell me about it. Obviously, I can see it. If I can't see it, that's on me. Or if I don't do an inspection, that's on me.
Yeah.
But if it's like hitting the wall, like plumbing is really bad and I can't really tell, AC is really bad because like every time I come in, that's when you turn it on, but you don't want to tell me about it. Or, you know, there's a leak somewhere that's inside the wall, you don't tell me about it.
Right.
My latest is, where was this? This was like, I think in Spokane, where someone literally just looked at the vacant lot and then didn't know there were certain animals living under the land. And the realtor said there was nothing there. Seller says there's nothing there. And come to find out, we have some animals that, you know, that are living there, and my client cannot just go out there and just remove them because they're protected class.
Yeah.
So they had an obligation to disclose that because now it's going to cost my client $87,000 to remove these animals.
Oh, wow.
That's how much. So they had an obligation to disclose things. They didn't disclose things. So I see that a lot. Where
so is non-disclosure similar to like errors and omissions, or is that something totally different, like when an inspection and they failed to inspect it properly?
That would be something completely separate for like the error and omission. But yeah, the non-disclosure is just has to do with the house. Something about the house they should have told you about, they mm-hmm. didn't tell you.
Gotcha. Okay. And then you're directly litigating against the seller?
Correct. Okay. The seller and the broker sometime, because the broker may, in bad faith, knew about this and didn't disclose it.
Okay.
Because the broker also have an obligation, because if they know something, they have to, like, you know, say something.
Yeah.
But again, it's not everything. It's just major thing. And of course, it has to affect the value of the property. So we're not talking about just an outlet. That's
yeah, every
like,
little
you know,
every little minor detail in the home.
Yeah, we're not talking about the chandeliering. You know, we're not talking about that. We're talking about, like, roof plumbing, things like, you know, anytime that you got to spend some money, like my client has to spend, like, $87,000, that affects the value of the property, because if he knew that, he would have paid $87,000 less.
Right. Yeah, and so then I don't know if it's anything like personal injury. So when I'm looking at a personal injury case, we're typically looking for the parties that have coverage. If we find out there's really no insurance coverage or anything for us to pursue, then a lot of times it's not a case that we can take or litigate because there's nothing to go after. So when you have a situation like that where you're suing a seller, what do you? How do you decide if you can pursue that or not?
So that's a great question. So the way I decide is based on the validity of the case.
Okay.
I do not have an insurance or an error admission that I can go after. So let's say, for example, I decide to go after the broker because I think the broker kind of knew about it.
Yeah.
And I will probably, in my letter, request that the broker pay for it or the seller pay for it, or the broker gives me their error and admission so I can call and put a claim.
Gotcha.
They're not going to.
Okay.
The only way you can get that is through discovery.
Right, right.
But
gotcha.
That's true. You have to actually file the lawsuit.
You actually have
right?
to file it, right?
You gotcha. Actually have. So it's not like, you know, car insurance where we can just send a letter. We know you got a car insurance. We know who
yeah.
it is. No,
yeah.
we don't know who the error and omission agency is, and then they're not going to provide that. So what I do is I just, based on the validity of the case, if I feel like, you know, there's something there, I will tell them, hey, this is what I see, and you definitely have a case, or you don't have a case, or it's 80%, but, and then, of course, we will request attorney's fees and all that stuff after we sue. But the first thing that would probably happen, which I've done this before, is just send out a demand letter to everybody.
Exactly.
Everybody. So what you do is broker, seller, realtor, you know, if the broker has, like, other people working in there, like they said in law school, you sue everybody, then you can take them out if you need to.
Exactly, exactly.
So the demand letter goes to everybody. Then I give them a deadline, and I said, hey, our client would demand, you know, certain compensation, and then please respond back within 20 days. Then within the 20 days, it doesn't work out, they don't respond. Then I'll advise the client, and I'll say, hey, let's go ahead and, you know, move with litigation if you want to. Otherwise, you know, you can just keep the cost.
Yeah.
It's kind of like buying an underwater house.
Exactly. Okay. Well, that makes perfect sense. So what I can do, we've got a whole lot more to talk about. Mac has given us quite a bit of good knowledge here on real estate law, and we've not even really touched the tip of the iceberg. But I want to take a short commercial break. I want to see if I can fix my audio. I think we're having some audio issues on our Facebook feed. Going to take a quick break, play a quick commercial. We're going to have you hold the line, McKinley. We're going to see if we can restart our Facebook Live, and then we'll be back from the commercial break to answer more questions regards to real estate law. If you have any questions for Mac, you'd like to ask him about real estate law, the number to call in is 727-441-3000. Once we get our Facebook Live back up, you can comment in the chat section. I'll read those questions out for Mac as well over the air, and we will be right back after this commercial break.
Oh.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
In 1955, the law firm now known as Peronick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes made a decision. Instead of taking whatever cases came through their doors, they decided to focus specifically on personal injury. 64 years later, the law firm is one of Clearwater's longest-running personal injury firms. Available 24 hours a day with offices in Clearwater and throughout Tampa Bay, they're ready to put decades of experience to work for you if you or a loved one has been injured in a car accident or injured due to someone's negligence or recklessness. If you feel overwhelmed, uncertain, or unsure about your next steps after being involved in an accident or after a loved one sustained serious injuries due to someone else's negligence, call Peronick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes at 727-796-8282 or online at usalaw.com. That's 727-796-8282 or online at usalaw.com. Non-attorney spokesman.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And we are back with FLA Law live on the radio. Hopefully you have been tuned in on your drive home. Also watching us on Facebook. We have some audio issues, but hopefully it's working now. I'm not too sure. But we have our special guest. He's been doing an awesome job giving us some information on on real estate law in the state of Florida. And we just talked a little bit about non-disclosure litigation, touched a little bit on errors and omissions. But of course, McKinley, there's so much more that you do. I know you also are a real estate broker, correct?
That is correct.
So I know a lot of people have concerns right now about the market. Is it a good time to buy? Is it a good time to sell? Is it a seller's market? Is it a buyer's market? Are the interest rates going to get any better? So can you touch on a little bit of that right now?
I love that. I don't believe in good market or bad market.
Okay.
I just believe in the market.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter what industry you're in. Somebody's always selling and somebody's always buying.
Right.
You just have to decide for yourself why you're buying and why you're selling.
Right.
So if you're buying because of personal reason, then you're buying for personal reason. If you're buying for investment reason, your numbers got to match up. You just got to know how much you're willing to make or how much you got to put in the house. So, but as of right now, we are on the seller's market.
Okay.
So a seller's market is where, you know, there's not a lot of listings out there. And as a seller, if I list something, it will go fast. It's a high demand for it.
Gotcha.
Buyer's market is when I have choices. Like I go to Walmart and I pick and choose my bananas. I can pick and choose what I want.
I gotcha.
So there's a lot of listings in the market. So that's when you will have like a buyer's market. Pandemic time, it was like a super, super seller's market. Nothing really lasted. Everything was going crazy.
Right.
People just spent a lot of ridiculous money, just throw money basically at things.
Yeah.
And then so that's why we're kind of getting away from like the super selling market, which was in the pandemic. Right now, we're just at a seller's market.
Got it.
That being said, there are a lot of more listings going up in the market. So I think between January and now, there's like maybe 10-15% more listings in the market.
Which means the inventory will be increasing soon.
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you are seeing some transition to like maybe, a fair market or a middle market. But again, you know, any market is a market. You're either buying or you're either selling. It doesn't matter if the market crashes tomorrow. Someone is buying.
Yeah.
Okay? We have 2 million listings for every 100, people.
Yeah.
Somebody will buy or sell.
I got you.
So as far as that goes, we are in a pretty good seller's market, and it's starting to transition really well where people have options, and then it's not as high.
Right.
You don't have like a million, but, you do have some options.
Right, and I think a lot of people that were already homeowners during the pandemic, they probably saw a good value jump in terms of the value of their property. So Does that seem to go the opposite way when it's a buyer's market? Do property values decrease, or do they continue to appreciate regardless? Like you said, a market is a market.
Yeah, well, yeah. So you will always have, like, you know, expensive cars or you cheap cars. So you will have in the buyer's market when there is a lot of choices, right?
Right.
If I do have a lot of choices, I can negotiate. You know, you go to Walmart for that banana, you can't negotiate with Walmart. You just got to buy that. But in real estate, you can always negotiate selling price. You can always negotiate, you know, down payment. You can always negotiate expenses. You can always negotiate repairs. So, yeah, in a buyer's market, you're going to have something, you know, a little bit less than in a seller's market. In a seller's market, you're going to have it, like, high as up there.
Yeah.
And then so people will make their own rule, and then they'll tell you take it or leave it, that type of thing.
So it gets a lot different when depending on what the market is as far as how you're negotiating and making your offers on different properties, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So I think we may have a caller on the line. Is there somebody there with a question on the line?
Yes, there is somebody here.
Hi, how are you? What's your name?
Bob.
Hi, Bob. How are you? Go ahead with your question.
All right. Well, this is real estate related.
Okay.
But not related to market. So the question I have is, you hear these guys advertising on the radio all the time, these scary stories about these people stealing your title and borrowing money against it and all that. So how real is that? Since he was talking earlier about title insurance and title abstracts and things of that nature, I'm just curious. Can somebody actually go in there, forge your name, your paperwork, and still get the county to basically turn the deed over to them?
Yes, so it's definitely possible. But it doesn't happen as often that you hear it on the news or as often that I think you would hear it. But it does have absolutely happen. But that happens when property is in distress. That happened when you go up and leave the property, you go to China, and you don't come back for like 3 years. Because squatters or people who are looking for these houses want to make sure they're distressed. If somebody's living in there or you're renting it out, it's very, very, very unlikely that, you know, somebody's going to, like, take the deed. But if the property is, you know, in the middle of nowhere, it's a vacant lot, you never visit it, you know, grass is, like, yay high, you know, all of that stuff, that's what those scammers, those people are looking for. But it is absolutely very possible somebody can just go to your house on 123 Main Street and then do a fake mortgage and record the fake mortgage. Okay,
wow.
Your recourse would be to sue them for fraud in our acquired title. But yes, it definitely has happened in the last, I would say, 5 years I've been doing this. I think I've seen it maybe like 4 times already.
Wow. Bob, do you have
any
follow-up
questions? So how do you protect yourself?
How do you protect yourself from... there's really no real... Like, again, like the only way you protect yourself is to maintain your property. Take care of your property.
Go and visit it. Yeah.
Go and visit it. File your taxes because, again, they will look to see if you filed taxes in the last couple of years or so. Just like if you own a business in the state of Florida, you don't file your annual report. Those people can do the same thing, too, and then try to take your business. So if you take care of your property, you maintain it, have somebody drive by, fence the property. Don't just have something just wide open for squatter to just come and sit there. Or just invite people. No, fence it, visit it, pay your taxes, pay your HOA fee. They won't even look at
it. Yeah. So
basically,
I would imagine.
Go ahead,
Bob. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, if everything's current, chances are they'll skip over it. But if they see delinquencies of any kind, then they feel that you're prey.
Yes, sir. Because if you go to China for like 5 years, chances are they're going to own the house and sell it by the time you get back.
Yeah, so you've got to have your head on a swivel when it comes to these kind of things. And I see it, I would foresee this happening with people that have inherited property and they're in another state. Grandma, grandpa passed away. They left you something and you never go down and visit it, never check on it. And before you know it, it's been scammed out from under you.
So what recourse do you have?
The recourse you have is you got
to
sue them.
You have to sue them, sounds like, yeah.
You have to sue them. There's nothing else you can do. You can't really call the cops because that's not really a criminal matter. Of course, it is a criminal matter, fraud.
Wow.
But the cops are not going to be the one debating whether or not they have real title versus you. So your recourse is to take him to court for fraud and inquire title to remove that cloud from your house.
Yeah. It sounds like a big headache, so it's definitely something you want to get out in front of and be proactive to try to prevent that kind of thing.
Absolutely. And so you don't want to wait too long, too, because the other thing, too, if you wait too long, they can sell the property, take the money, and then just leave. So while they're in the house or while they're there...
Oh, my gosh. They can sell your property. Wow.
Yes, ma'am. They can sell it. Since if I go, if somebody give me a contract and I look at the title, it looks like it's their name on there and it looks like a signature, I'm not a handwriting expert.
Right.
I'm not going to try to figure out if this is Bob's house versus this is the scammer's house.
Yeah.
So I will go through title, pay them, and all that stuff. So that's why you got to move fast, because you want to sue them. And then when you sue them, you want to put a list pendants on the property, which is a lien on the property that says, hey, there's a cloud on the property.
Right. Does that answer your question, Bob?
Yeah, that's pretty close. I appreciate it. And of course, then we could get into squatter's rights and all this other stuff. But I'll hang up and let you talk about that if you want to.
Yes, it's actually something we were going to get into. So definitely keep listening.
That's right. All right. Good show. Thank you.
No, thanks for calling. So that's actually a good point, Matt, because I was looking at an article the other day about this poor guy. I think he bought a property in like the 90s and just kind of never came back. But everybody kind of knew him in the neighborhood. It was like his family neighborhood where he grew up, but he moved away, never came back. And then all of a sudden, one of his neighbors called him and was like, hey, I didn't know you were building a property on that lot. And he's like, I'm not. And so he found out that someone had done exactly what, you know, Bob had mentioned, like they had created some fake title, I guess, and then sold the property to a developer, and the developer was like building this massive mansion or something, I don't know. And he's now going through this process to litigate it because they never had, you know, title to the property, and they basically got scammed. So it's really unfortunate for everybody involved, and the scammer is who knows where, you know, but you know, this, he would have never known had his neighbors not called him and said, hey, I didn't know you were building something.
But so this is where it's really important, really, really important, because back in, you know, again, back in year one, okay, we want people to take care of their property, right? We want people to preserve property because we don't want them to neglect their property. So back in the old days, it was perfectly okay to do adverse possession to have squatters,
right?
But now our lovely governor, I think earlier sometime this month, signed a new law in place, which is going to make it more difficult to squatter.
Okay, good. Because I wasn't sure where we were going with this, because I was seeing a lot in the news that it just seemed like it was way too easy to be a squatter. So where are things now with the new law?
So where are things are now with the new law? There's two things you gotta do. If the person unlawfully enter the premises and they remain after you ask them to leave, you can call the cops.
Okay.
It's just that easy. So you go over, you go to that property, even if it's like, you know, 30 years. But again, they can always argue adverse possession in the state of Florida at 7 years. So if somebody sits in your house for 7 years and take care of the property just like you would as an owner, pay taxes, all the loan and all other stuff, they may have a claim on the property.
Right.
But any time before the 7 years or even after the 7 years, if they don't know that, again, if you did not give them permission and you ask them to leave and they not leave, then you can call the cops.
Got it. Okay.
So it's making it simpler. But again, it's not the same as like the people you gave permission to. So if you gave somebody permission to be there, okay, then it's a different issue.
Right, because this is not like, we're not talking like a tenant who just decided to hold over,
but like,
right?
Sometimes people will be like, yeah, you can, you know, live here, even people they don't know.
Yeah.
They'll squat for a little bit and then never leave. So it can't be like the friend.
And now you can't get them out, right?
You can't get them out, exactly.
Yeah.
It can't be the friend, family, or the neighbor, or, you know, a tenant issue.
Right.
So the tenant is somebody that pays rent and do all that stuff. It has to be a complete stranger.
Right.
Complete stranger. You have no idea how they got in here. You have no idea what they're doing there.
Okay.
And then you tell them to leave, and they don't want to leave, you can call the cops.
So when the cops come, and again, I'm playing out a hypothetical scenario, so you may not even know the answer to this, but when the cops arrive, I'm the property owner. I own this property. This person, this stranger, is squatting. How do I prove to the cop that I don't know this person and that they're a squatter? Do I have to bring certain documents? What are the police going to look at?
What I would bring is, I would bring the copy of the deed. And okay. If you don't have a copy of the deed, go to the property appraiser's office.
Sure.
Every county has a property appraiser's office. You can pull up the deed and bring your ID.
Right.
That's really what you, that's all you would need.
Yeah.
But if they have something that says, hey, I got mail here, this is my lease and all that stuff, then it becomes a different story.
Exactly.
Yeah, they don't have, if they don't have anything at all and it's just your word, your ID matches the deed, then we're good.
Yeah, so that's what I've been seeing a lot online of people, these squatters, or however you want to characterize them, they'll have some sort of fake document like a lease and say, oh, I have a lease, and Or somebody scammed them and they thought they were actually renting a place when it really was not theirs to be renting. And so they
That's where it gets, you know. That is where it gets tricky. That is where, you know, the cop is not going to be the judge and the handwriting expert.
Mm-hmm.
Say, hey, you know, they're right, you're wrong, or you're wrong, they're right, because that's like the legal field.
Right.
That's not the cop's job. But assuming they have nothing, they're just saying I'm here. They can't really show anything. But going back to what I said earlier, these people look for distressed houses. Just like the camera.
Yeah.
Okay? They look for houses that people have never been to or people have never showed up to. And so they know they're going to be safe for like the next actually 10 days.
Yeah.
Then 10 days becomes like a month, and a month becomes 3 years, and then so forth. If you take care of the property, You won't have, like, you know, squatter. If you change the lock, make sure there are no open windows,
yeah,
you know, things like that, you won't have to worry about, too many squatters.
Gotcha. And so then, what would you be your advice to renters who are maybe looking at a property to rent, and they believe they're dealing with someone who owns the property, and they sign a lease agreement, only to find out that this person is a scammer, and they didn't actually rent or own the property, and now they're in a property that they're not supposed to be in or can't even move into, or they show up thinking it's move-in day and they can't. What do you recommend for people like that in that situation?
I would say scammers out there, these guys are very sophisticated.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now.
Yeah.
The email, the letter, the phone call, the Nigerian princes, they exist. And there are so sophisticated.
Right.
And so I say this because I almost got caught on it myself.
Yeah.
Like, I used to work at a place and I got an email that says, hey, I need you to transfer $40,000 to me.
Yeah.
And then I thought it was my actually broker, and then I come to find out it was not.
Yeah.
So one thing that I'll mention is, like, they're very sophisticated when they talk to you. So don't think, like, you can tell the difference between them and a professional like you.
Yeah.
They talk the same way they walk. But what you can do is verify the information, wire information, money. Anytime you're sending money, always verify and call the actual company.
Yeah, I've seen this a lot. I'm glad you mentioned it. The wiring of like the money for closing, and that gets intercepted. So, and I hear people, even people sometimes call our firm. Unfortunately, we don't do that, but they'll call us looking for help, and I see like it's happening a lot more. So what do you do? I think even in your signature block in your email, you have something,
yeah,
a wire
absolutely.
Warning, right?
Yes, I do. That's how big it is. Because if somebody knows you're buying a property, they're going to try to intercept that and try to get you to send them the money. Because they know you got to send the money to somebody.
Right.
Might as well just be them. And if they can, like, call you or text you and say, hey, you know what, this is a new instruction, yada, 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 you just go ahead and just send it to them. So that's why it's always great to just verify that information before you send, before you give. Always see the house. before you actually do the application, before you do anything.
So how do you do that? How do you verify? What is it that you would recommend? Like, say I got this email from who I thought was my legitimate people that I'm dealing with, and it turns out that I'm not. What did you say? Would you say that I should just call whoever I've been dealing with, or what would be the...
110%. You just, hey, man, again, I've been dealing with you, but now I got Nathan's email, and he want, like, you know, $3,000.
Yeah.
I just want to verify this account information on if the address is still good, and is Nathan the new guy that I'll be dealing with.
Right. And then they can tell you right then and there.
And then, exactly. They can tell you right then and there. Always call the company. Always call the realtor. Because if you have a realtor or a lawyer, somebody you're dealing with, they will also know if the money is going to change hands.
Right.
If someone else needs to hold the money. So I don't care if you need to verify with like 19 people. You verify with all 19. Because if you don't, it's going to be a bigger problem.
Right. I can't even imagine showing up for your closing and you think you're about to buy your dream home and you're getting ready to sign all the documents and they're like, wait a minute, we never got your wire.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that would be the most devastating thing ever.
No, it'll be absolutely the worst. Then you probably can't buy a house.
Yeah, it all falls apart.
I probably can't find a Nigerian friend. Nowhere to be found. So you kind of like lost the money.
Yeah, so then I did not, when I bought my home, I did not have an attorney, you know, representing me or show up for with me at the closing. So how do you do that? And do you recommend that people have attorneys, you know, going through that process and purchasing the home and going through the closing and reviewing the documents? Is that something that you would recommend?
Yeah, I would recommend it, but it's not necessary.
Okay.
And the reason why is there is no surprise document at closing. Okay? You should not go to a closing and then, like, literally there's a brand new document you've never seen or never heard about.
Right.
All of the documents you will sign, you will have seen them through your lender.
Right.
Or through the title company. So my house recommendation would be the minute that you get the contract signed,
mm-hmm.
you have the attorney review it, or even before,
right.
if you don't have a realtor.
Right.
If you don't have a realtor, then have the attorney look over the contract just to make sure, because the title company, again, has to be neutral, and everything on the contract, the title company has to, like, do. So
gotcha.
They can't do something else. They can't, you know, make up their own stuff or write their own contract or contact the buyer or the seller and add things. It's kind of like, you know, a judge talking to a party, like an ex parte.
Gotcha. Okay.
So my recommendation would be when you do get an attorney to review the contract before you sign it, if you don't have a realtor. If you have a realtor, then after, you know, they've done talking to you, you can hire an attorney to say, hey, attorney, I would like your legal representation just so you can tell me what this contract is. And then maybe for you to explain to me, you know, what all of these documents that I will be signing, you know, at the closing table.
Right.
And then, yes, I will absolutely go there with you.
Yeah, it's a it's a massive amount of documents, and that's just all I remember. As an attorney, I'm thinking I should really be reading this stuff that I'm signing, and we're just sitting there sign, not even looking at it. So.
But the other thing you could do is just read the title. They can't tell you this is a title for, like, you know, application authorization, and then but you're selling yourself.
Right.
You know, it just can't be like, hey, I want your car.
Right.
That type of stuff.
You just sold your firstborn child, so.
Yeah. So if the title doesn't match what's in the actual document, mm-hmm. then it's illegal. That's completely illegal.
Right.
So again, the attorney, I can definitely, I've gone to actual closing, but it's more like, you know, complex, like, you know, commercial,
mm-hmm.
or right there and then we're drafting the document or we're doing something.
Right.
But if it's like straightforward, you know, single family house, I can tell you almost every document you will see at the closing.
Right.
I can, you know, review the contract with you and tell you what the step is. So you don't necessarily need an attorney at like a residential closing, because your realtors will probably show up too.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So then let's kind of pivot a little bit. I know you also do property management and you mentioned some landlord-tenant situations. So in the situation, let's say you are a landlord and you know, you're, let's say you got a multiple properties and you are dealing with tenants and you have all these various, you know, tenant related issues, do you recommend that people should have property managers or someone to help them handle evictions, or is that something they can really handle on their own?
If you want to be like, if you have like maybe like 3 or 4 properties and you're retired and you got time in your hand, you want to learn some eviction law in Florida, 100% go.
Be my guest, right?
Absolutely. But again, you get what you pay for, even with you.
Right.
Right?
So well, you know what they say. They say the person who has you have yourself for an attorney, that you have a fool for a client. So
that's right.
The man
right.
that represents
you're
himself.
Client,
yeah.
You're the worst attorney.
Yeah.
You can't step outside of yourself.
Right.
It's
right.
really extremely hard for you to do that. So, yes, 110% I recommend, if you have like more than 2-3 properties, I would definitely recommend you hire a property manager, because it's not that much. So my company, we charge 10% on whatever we collect.
Okay.
So if the rent is $1,000, I'm only collecting $100
right.
a month.
Right.
That is nothing.
Yeah.
I can spend my time in Cancun being an attorney for like 2 weeks for the year, and I'll be fine.
Yeah.
So I don't make too much with the property management. So for property management, it's more like a relationship, or they want to sell the property afterward. That's
sure.
what I really look forward to. So the property management is just for fun. But there's a lot of things that goes into it. You got to know when to post your notice. You got to know when to exclude.
Right.
Saturday,
the statute
Sunday.
Is very specific, right?
Very specific. Mm. Super specific. I think it's the specific statute that we have in the state of Florida. It's very clear.
Yes.
But if you don't do it, you waive your right. You miss.
Right.
So, you know, you got to serve the 3-day notice. After the 3-day, then you got to do the eviction. Then after the eviction, they got about 5 days. Then after the 5 days, they got to do 2 things. They got to either, they got to input money in the court registry. So you got to keep up with all these deadlines. You
right.
got to find out when you can do repairs, what kind of repairs you need to do. You know, things like that. It gets kind of muddy, and especially if you don't want to worry about, you know, people saying you're discriminating against them, they're doing this and that. You got to have a set guideline and rules for a potential, you know, a renter.
Right. And so do you do that at your firm, kind of help landlords make sure that they're not stamping on landmines, discriminating against individuals, improperly evicting people? Do you help with that sort of thing if people are looking for guidance?
Every day.
Okay.
Sometimes, like, I'll get calls and they're like, "You did what? You better go back and call them and apologize."
Yeah, so, yeah, correct that now.
Like, yeah, so it could be like, you know, the one off. So if you just want, just like us first, the lease for you, we can just do. If you just want us to just do the screening, we can do that. But if you want to put us, you know, we have general camps. So if you just want to be, you know, one of those general clients that just call, we'll put you on a retainer.
Right.
You can just call us ever, if ever you have anything. I have one guy right now. I really need to build you because he's been with me for like 2 years, man. I haven't spent any of the money because he has no problem going on right now.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh. So we are getting close to our time, but I have one last question before we wrap up and tell everybody how they can reach you and find you and give you a call after the show is over. Evictions, are they still as bad as they were during COVID, or has that now smoothed out and it's not as bad of a backlog?
None. It's not as bad as a backlog.
Okay.
I filed an eviction, I believe. When was my last eviction? The last eviction that I filed was late March.
Mm-hmm.
It already came back served, and 5 days will be on the 26th. So I can tell you by next Friday, they'll be out.
Wow. Okay, good. So that's kind of back to normal then.
Yeah, correct. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. Justin, McKinley Justin has been our guest tonight on FLA Law Live on the radio. You've been awesome. We're definitely going to have you come back. You're great. And there's so many more things that we really could have talked about if we didn't run out of time. But I definitely want our listeners to know, how can they find you if they have any other questions or would like you to represent them?
Oh, that's perfect. So my phone number is 833-535-2529. My email is mackmack@jflalaw.com.
Awesome.
And my website
Go ahead,
is
give that.
www jflalaw.com.
Awesome. You've been the best, Mac, and I look forward to having you back on the show one day. Have a good night, everyone. That's FLA Law on the radio.